You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. Today, we're going to have a great time because we are going to be talking with Hernani Alves, who's the CEO of Balanced IQ Leadership, has written a book on accountability. And so we are going to have a great time talking about what business looks like through his eyes today. So welcome, Hernani.
Thank you, Will. Thank you for having me on your show here and the invitation. I love what you're doing here, having, you know, kind of an outlet for CEOs for some best practices. Well done.
Good. Well, thank you. Hernani, first, tell me, where did this name come from? Interesting name. Tell me where it came from.
Yeah, it's unique. It's not one that I probably would have given myself if I would have had the choice at the time. But now that I've really grown up with it, I love it. So I was born in Angola, Africa. So I'm third generation there.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah, so my dad had migrated there and met my mom and then had me. And then there was a famous singer there. My sister's actually 15 years older than I am. She had this famous singer that his name was Hernani. And she was just hoping that I would have those amazing voices. Like kind of, he was like the Elvis Presley of Africa. But unfortunately, I let my mom down and my sister. I can't sing, but that's where the name came from. Hernani. Oh,
very nice. Very nice. Yeah. Well, so tell us, how did you come around to writing a book on accountability?
It was something I never thought I would do. I started working for a company here in California called Sleep Train. And I started there. It was just going to be part-time. It was only for 6 months to help out a friend. Uh-huh. And I was a part-time salesperson. And then I got into the company. I fell in love with it. They gave me a store to run in my first 6 months. And I went to that store. We set records. I got myself noticed by the executive team. And then I moved on up in the company to eventually becoming the president of a company. It's a company that ended up doing over $3 billion in sales. So I was blown away to be surrounded by such great people and were able to accomplish that.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about how you got to this whole notion of how accountability will help a company.
Well, it started with me. And so when I started with the company Sleep Train, in the first 6 months, I got this store that's in Stockton, California. And the reason I got that store is because no one else applied. And my district manager reached out to me and said, "Hey, Hernani, I think you should apply." And I was like, "Well, you probably have all these great candidates. You don't need anybody else." And he goes, "No, you should do it. This would be a great experience for you." So after three questions, he told me I had the job and I was blown away. And I told him, "How did I get it? Don't you have to call people and let them know that they didn't get it?" And he goes, "Nope, you're the only one that applied. So wish you all the best."
My son came home to us when he was in the fourth grade, and he said, my it's getting ready for the summer, and so the guinea pig that we've had in our class, the teacher has to give it away, and so she's going to have a drawing of all the kids, you know." so could I have permission to put my name in? And we said, sure. I mean, the chances that he's going to win the drawing for this guinea pig, very small. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
He came home with the guinea pig, and it's the same thing. He was the only one who had permission.
That's funny. At least he asked.
Yeah.
That's great.
That's right. That's right.
He could have just came home and said, Mom and Dad, look what I won today. And you're kind of, uh-oh. Right. So that's good.
So tell me what did you discover being the CEO of this rapidly growing company?
Well, kind of going back to my manager, when I first got that store stocked, and everybody told me, "You're just going to go there and die. They're going to close the store. You're just wasting your time. You're killing your career." So I went there, and in the first 2 months, we tripled the store's business. So just to kind of give you an idea, the store was doing just south of 50,000. We got it up to 150,000. And this is with three other sales associates and an assistant manager. I was on top of my game. My district manager, the one that gave me the job, came into town, said, "Hernani, I want to take you out to lunch." At this point, my team there had never gotten bonuses. Now they're getting bonuses. They're on top of their game. I thought they were loving it. So we got to lunch, and he tells me something I couldn't believe. He said, "Your team doesn't want to work with you anymore." And I go, "What? You got to be kidding me. They're getting their biggest checks they've ever gotten. They're exceeding their bonus. They're better salespeople. We're moving on up." He goes, "They just don't want to work with you. You are just too much by the book. You're on top of them all the time." And that kind of threw me away, blew me away that I was doing something like that, because I thought I was trying to make them better. Because that was the only way I really understood accountability. It was with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to kind of do some self-reflection. I had won our President's Club trip to Hawaii. And while I was at the airport, I went through the books and started looking at books, because I had to find a way to kind of make some improvements in my own life and become a better leader. And I picked up the book Well Done by Ken Blanchard. Mm-hmm. And it's about positive relationships. And I came back and I started really doing what the book was saying. It was catching people doing things right, really magnifying it.
Mm-hmm.
And then before I knew it, that team that wanted to leave me now wants to stay with me. And they actually stayed with me, moving on to other stores, other locations, so much that that team gave me an award for being the best leader they've had. And that's been one of my favorite awards that I've won.
Ah, great. So one of the things that you found is that positive reinforcement is helpful.
Very important. That is positive accountability. And in the book, I call it the three P's of accountability. And the first P is personal accountability. You got to really reflect on yourself. Look at what you're doing, and have you gotten feedback from your team, what they want you to do more or less of? And then the second P is positive accountability. And that's really, you start catching people doing things right. You start magnifying it. And that's really when sales become viral in a good way, where they start to really take off, because everybody starts to jump on that bandwagon. They really want to be a part of it. And then the last P is where most leaders want to go straight to, but they can't. They really got to do the first two. It's called performance accountability. And this is where you have public scoreboards, metrics that everyone can see exactly how you're ranking and how you're contributing in performance and helping the team.
Yeah. Okay. So give me some examples of what you learned from your reflection to achieve that positive, that personal accountability.
Well, I was young. I was early, I was probably about 23. Very cocky. I was just kind of one of those, like, those salespeople where it's my way or the highway. And that's kind of how I had my team set up. And then I realized that when I started moving up in the company, I couldn't be there. I couldn't micromanage the team. So I had to give them a vision of where we're headed. But then I need them to kind of help put their roadmaps together on how they're going to achieve that vision, how they're going to kind of come together. And I also needed to understand that everybody has their own way of getting there. It's kind of like if I was to ask you, Will, to make a chocolate cake, I'd give you a little basic instructions, but you're probably going to make your chocolate cake the way you would like to make it, which is great because you're going to enjoy it. You're going to have some ownership of it. And it's not going to be exactly the way that I wanted it. But at the end of the day, we got ourselves a fabulous chocolate cake because I gave you some ownership to it.
Right, right. All right. Yeah. So then what about, give me some examples of positive reinforcement that you used in your company.
The positive, this is where when you first roll out some initiative, you've got a let's say it's a year-end performance metric, something that you really want to improve. And most of the time when your team sees that, they see a huge number. And they're like, how are we going to get there? You know, we had such a great year last year. This year we got to go up. But it really starts breaking down on catching people doing things right. And what you're going to have is you're going to have some people that come right out of the gate starting to do some great performances. And it's really highlighting those people and showing them this is where we're at already. This is where we're headed. I can't believe how short amount of time we did it, and really starting to magnify their performance. And then kind of doing what you do with this show, you bring in CEOs, you have a chance to kind of share some best practices. People get a little bit of different CEOs of what they're doing and what's working, what's not. And it works very similar in the workplace where you kind of bring your team together. What's working? What's not? What should we do more of, less of? And then it really creates that high performance culture where the team kind of really starts coming together.
Okay. And the third P was?
Performance.
Okay. So some examples.
Performance is going to be, this is where you have to have a public scoreboard. And some companies, they're like fear, like we're not going to put our bottom performers and show them where that. But if you go to a football game, you can look up on the scoreboard and see exactly how much time's left on the clock, who's doing what. You go to a basketball game, you can see how many points somebody has, how many fouls they have. You can look at all those metrics. In baseball, they love metrics. So you know exactly how they're doing. And once you're able to show what those metrics look like, most people don't want to be in the bottom all the time. So they're going to want to be closer to the average. And that's where you become a coach. You help them become successful. Not always happy. Most leaders, what they want to do is make everybody happy around them. And what you should be focused on is making people successful first. And then later, they're going to feel that happiness come from that.
Now, did you observe a difference between the managers who were intent on getting what they wanted from the people they managed versus the managers who asked the people they were managing what they wanted?
Yeah, it's a big difference. A manager will kind of tell their team what to do, right? And then a good leader will do quite the opposite. They'll present, this is our challenge. This is where we need to head, and we need to kind of collaborate and come up with a solution to get there. And when you do that, what you've done is you've just handed off all this ownership to your team, and they're a part of the putting together the action plan to get where you're at. And now it allows you for accountability to come back and say, hey, this is what we talked about. These are things that you brought up that you wanted to do. Where are we with that? And that's a good way of bringing accountability and keeping them on track of where we're headed.
Yeah, it seems to me, at least in my experience, that if somebody doesn't want to do something, they're not going to do it, or they're going to do it half-heartedly, and they're going to make a lot of excuses. And so one of the first questions that I have found helpful is, if there's something that I want to do or the company is asking us to do, is to be as explicit as I can about it, articulate what the request is, and then ask, is this something you guys want to do? And if they don't want to do it, we could talk about it. But if they don't, then I'm going to be looking for somebody else to help me with it. Somebody who wants.
Right on. Yeah, no, you're right on with that. But as a leader as well, too, is you've got to, this is where the personal accountability comes in. Your ideas aren't always the best ideas.
Right.
What you want to do as a leader, you want to spark the idea, but then bring your team in is, how can we make this? How can we execute this initiative? And what's the best way to do it? And then we've got to, what some leaders sometimes they don't talk about, what's the Armageddon? What happens if everything just goes bad? How are we going to handle it? And you actually come up with a plan of, if this did happen, this is how we're going to handle it. And you're just prepared for it. And it really just creates, when everybody comes out of there, they're just locked arms and they are ready to go conquer those goals. And you've got to have metrics. How are we going to measure this? How are we going to measure our performance? And if you could do that coming out of the meeting and everybody's agreed and it's something that you can measure it weekly and you kind of, it's a little checkpoint and it's a public scoreboard, you're going to start getting better results.
Yes. Yeah, Dan yep. Sullivan, my coach, says to me that you always look for the who before you look for the how.
And perfect.
And so the who is somebody who has three things. They get what this action has to do with achieving the company vision. They want to do it, and they have the capacity to do it. And if they don't have one of those three, they're not the person. They're not the who. And we go to find another who. But once we find the who, then I agree with you. It's a collaborative conversation about what is the how.
Yeah, and I've learned with my experience, sometimes my biggest resistors up front, that I know they're going to be resistors, I like to bring them into the plan early. Mm-hmm. And many times those resistors become your most loyal. When they really grab on and they believe in what we're going to do, they have such a big ego that they're going to make sure that they help accomplish that. And now they've no longer been a resistor. Now they're really helping you kind of take this program to the next level. And then everybody else that's sitting on the sidelines are like, whoa, this guy converted or this gal converted. I can't believe it, because they know who the resistors are. And when they see that person bought in, they just really jump on board.
Yeah, I believe that many times the resistors are created by the managers.
Yes.
The managers are saying, this is what you got to do. And by the way, we're going to have a scorecard. It's going to be public. And if they're saying this is what you have to do, that automatically creates one of two things, either resistance or what we call compliance. Now, that doesn't mean we'll do it. It means I'll tell you I'll do it, and maybe I will and maybe I won't. But that that when the manager is telling people what they have to do, he's creating the resistors or the people who really won't come through.
Absolutely. And you know what they're going to do after that manager tells them what to do? They're just going to go, okay, let's just hold off. Let's wait another week. This my manager's going to have something else that he wants to do next week, so let's not even do it.
Right.
And they don't even do it. And then then your manager's saying, I'm surrounded with a bunch of idiots. I did. I can't stand it when a manager says that. And that's where they have to, from a personal accountability, they have to reflect on themselves and go,
right.
Have you gotten feedback from your team of what they would like you to see do more of or less of? And that's actually one of the first things I do with when I'm starting to work with CEOs, executives, or any leader that wants to get feedback from their team is let's do that. Let's do a 30-minute exercise. And sometimes they're blown away with some of the stuff that they get from their team, and their team wants to help them.
Right.
And when they see their leader get feedback from the rest, their team will now be so much more open-minded on getting feedback themselves. They're always like, I'd like to get feedback.
Right.
And that's where you start taking people to the next level and you start making them more successful. There's a little bit of pain in there because you're going to hear some things that you probably didn't want to hear. And there might be some things in there that don't make any sense. It only happened this one time, but you really got to look at those common denominators, those things that they're continuing to bring up. It could be as small as, hey, as a leader, you're always late to the meetings, or you always reschedule my meetings that we have one-on-one, or different things like that. You've got to really reflect that and know that you're probably letting your team down, and that's probably why you're not getting the performance that you should be getting.
Well, and so in a real sense, you're creating those stupid people that you have around you.
Yes. You're the nucleus. You're the reason why that's happening.
Right.
So,
and that's taking for the leader, taking responsibility for him or herself.
Absolutely.
Which to me is one of the most important things is when we take ultimate responsibility for what's going on in the company.
Absolutely. Steve Young, you probably know the quarterback for the 49ers. That's actually my team, so I always like to use him as an example. It's probably the last time we won some Super Bowls. But Steve Young in his career had 202 interceptions. That's a lot of interceptions. And every time it happened, what would happen? His team would look at him and they would like, what happened, Steve? How'd you throw this interception? The crowd would start going crazy. Like they would grab their heads and go, I can't believe you threw an interception. But what Steve Young always did is he'd get back to the sideline. He would take the hit, say, I screwed up. He didn't blame the receiver for running a wrong route. He didn't blame the lineman for letting the guy get through and kind of disrupt the play. He always just took the hit and apologized to his team and said, okay, this is what I learned from that. What did you guys see in there that I can do differently next time? They would talk about it. And when they got back on the field, they were ready. They were gung-ho, ready to go. And that really helped him win a lot of championships, and that came from Steve Young of taking that ownership. And that's where his team just wanted to surround him and protect him and be there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what in EOS, the Entrepreneurial Operating System, what we tell people is the good news is that you're responsible for all the great things in this company. And the bad news is, talking to the leadership team, you're responsible for all the bad things too.
Absolutely.
So,
and all the good.
That, yes. Now, what I heard from you with Steve Young is that another thing that we talk about in EOS is there's no such thing as failure. Once you have a goal, you either hit it or you don't. And if you don't, that's not a failure. That's an opportunity to learn.
Absolutely. And in the book, it's actually with a good friend of mine, a guy that I worked with for years. We had this, we called it successful screw-ups. He's the one that came up with that terminology because him and I used to get in trouble. We were very proactive employees and executives, and we would do some things. I remember getting called into the CEO office with our owner, our mentor, Dale Carlson, and he goes, okay, what'd you guys do? Why? And this is things that ended up costing millions of dollars. And he goes, it was a successful screw-up. This is what we learned. This is how we're going to fix it, and we're going to make it better. And we walked out of there without getting our last paycheck, but we walked out of there and we made it better. We actually ended up saving the company much more money, but we did take a big step back by our first successful screw up. So you really don't fail until you quit. If you quit, you're a failure. But if you just got to keep plugging away and making those improvements, then before you know, you've got a very good product.
Well, if in fact you see every one of those failures as an opportunity to learn, that becomes the investment in your college of success. And if you quit before you discover and learn and apply all your learnings, then you've just simply given up and you're not going to graduate.
Yeah, 100%. And one of the things I always like to kind of bring up with working with CEOs, because they're looking for that easy button. They just want that real easy, kind of like winning the lottery.
Right.
And I don't know anybody that's won the lottery personally. I've heard of people, but I don't know anybody, and none of my friends have ever won. I don't know about yourself, Will. Do you have any friends or anybody that's close to you that's won the lottery?
No,
we don't know that. But if we ask, talk about some successful people in your life, executives, how did they get there? And you really start digging down, you'll hear that it wasn't an easy road. They made mistakes. They learned from them. They regrouped and made improvements. And that's how you start making, that's what change is at the end of the day. Change equals improvements. All of us, that's why we're doing what we're doing, is to make those improvements to help us get to that next level, to help us achieve our vision and to leave this place. When we leave this place, when Father Time calls us, that it's a better world.
So tell me, how do you work with leaders? What's the process that you work with leaders?
One of the first things when they want to bring accountability into the workplace. So in a recent study from the Management Institute, only 3% of the CEOs and executives interviewed felt that they had accountability in the workplace. So 97% don't believe there's any accountability. But when there is, it's when they're holding people doing things wrong. It's kind of the stick. It's when they're firing someone. That's when they tend to hear about accountability. So the first thing I always like to do is talk about the most important person in their life and who that is. And we will either pretend it's a boardroom. We'll go around and talk about it. And many times it's the wife, it's a child, it's a parent. And then I really ask them, really, who is the most important person in your life? Who can take care of those people that you just brought up? And that's where they self-reflect and understand it's them. And this is where I need them to take the hit. This is the reason there's no accountability in their workplace starts with them. And once they understand that, we kind of have a chance to kind of talk through it and find out an action plan to really start showing their team that they're going to start holding themselves accountable. Because they could be doing things on social media. They could be walking into these meetings, not being in tuned, being on their phones or showing up late or always postponing or changing it. Well, your team can't get anything done because you're not there, or you're not giving them, you're micromanaging too much. You're not giving them the ability to make decisions without you there. So I really focus on them first. And if the executive or the leader doesn't want to start with them and they want to go straight to their team, I move on. It's not going to work. They're just going to end up, we can get some short-term performance gains out of it, but long-term, they're going to fall right back into this hole of people not wanting to leave their company, number one. They normally tend to have a high turnover rate because people are exiting because there isn't accountability in their workplace.
Now, so do you primarily work with one-on-one with executives or managers, or do you work with a group?
Yeah, so it depends. Primarily, I try to focus with first the executive or the CEO. There are some CEOs just aren't quite involved as much. So start normally with their executive team, and then eventually it grows into becoming the CEO, or I have a chance to work with them. But I've also worked with leaders and with a recent company. They put together an engagement committee, which had partners in there. We wanted to make sure the partners were involved, but we had all the way down to, you know, people that are kind of more of a receptionist were also in this. And I try to keep the group to about 8 so we could really deep dive into what are some of the challenges that the organization's happening. I always like to do a SWOT just right out of the gate. I do a SWOT with the executive team first, and then I do a SWOT with the actual sales team or whoever the group is.
Mm-hmm.
And many times those two SWOTs are completely different of what mm-hmm. they think the issues are.
Yeah.
So we always try to kind of really default on what's happening in the trenches and let's fix that first and then make some improvements.
So what tends to be the length of your engagement with a company?
It could be anywhere from, well, I've done conferences here where they just have me come in for a keynote. Mm-hmm. It'll be a 1 hour keynote, or it'll end up being a half day workshop or full day. I normally encourage at least a full day to a 2 day workshop mm-hmm. if they really want to maximize the accountability portion and make sure that they're following up. But normally it takes a good 6 months to kind of start creating some really good behaviors and things that are going to stick. You'll have some good behaviors in 30 days. You got to show them the social proof and show them how this is working, how this is improving. We're going to have some setbacks. We'll reflect that and make some improvements there. And then I really want to make sure that I don't own it going through the organization. I'm there as a coach, as a mentor to help their leadership team own it. Because once I leave, that's the team that has to really make it their own. And I allow them some wiggle room. You know, every company's different. They only have different software systems set up. Some of them have accountability systems already in place. But we've got to find a way that we can measure it from a metric point of view and have regular check-ins. When I say regular, it's not weekly. It's at least once a month where you're doing a one-on-one with your key performers to kind of check in where they're at. And it's just a 15-minute check-in point.
So am I hearing that your engagement, your involvement with them is a half day or a full day, and then they take it and work on it for the next 6 months to make the changes?
Okay. Correct. Lately, I've been coming in as a keynote to kind of get started and talk about accountability, because accountability, when people hear it, and I've had some organizations like, can we call it something else? Let's not call it accountability. I know you're going to be presenting. You got this really good keynote, but let's just call it something else, because they're worried their team's not going to show up. Mm-hmm. And I go, just call it balanced accountability, and just say winning hearts to maximize performance. And I can guarantee you that everyone's going to show up and they want to be a part of it. Yeah. Accountability equals love. And when you start talking about that, they want to know how could accountability equal love? And it's full of stories and different things that I talk about personally, and they can reflect on it. Will, you go back to, you've been very successful, and you go back to kind of the trigger. Who helped get you to understand success? And it might have been somebody you didn't like at first, but they truly held you accountable to a higher standard. And you probably have a few people that pop up in your mind that did that.
Well, it was always people who asked me what I wanted to do. And then they held me accountable for doing what I said I would do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big shift for many leaders, for many managers and executives, is to move from how do we get done what we want to get done to how do we find people who want to do what we want to get done? And then how do we support them with taking away the obstacles, doing training to help them get better? But the accountability is, this is what you said you would do. And are you doing it? Because you told me you wanted to. Now, if you've changed, then tell me. If you're going to do something different, then tell me. But if you still want to do this, how are we going to? Because if you didn't do it last week and you do the same thing next week that you did this week, what are the chances you're going to get any different results? So what are we going to change? And helping them to actually become accountable, rather than holding them accountable. That seems to me to be really important difference.
Big difference. Even you've heard of performance reviews. They're out there where some organizations, we're just not going to do them, or some organizations, they do it and it's going to take all day. But a performance review should come from the employee first. That's what it's kind of their own personal report card. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, and I kind of talk about it in there in my book, it's a personal report card. It's a one pager. They show up with this review, and many times what you'll find out is they're so hard on themselves that you're not as bad as you think you are. These are some things that you can make some improvements here, but you start focusing more forward thinking. But most of the time, performance reviews are quite the opposite. The manager writing this review and then talks about all the things that you did wrong. And here's what we got to do the next 6 months. There's just no ownership. But when they actually physically do it, when the employee does it, there's so much more ownership. So couldn't agree with you more. That is a big takeaway. It's one of the things that I do in my conferences, and we're doing a workshop. You've heard of action plans. Action plans normally come from a manager to their employee, and they'll write the action. This is what you got to do by this date. And if you don't do it, this is what's going to happen. But if you change that, that's kind of how they work. I've seen the act.
Summed
it up for most organizations.
And we cannot mention what the response is on this podcast because the words aren't acceptable. But that's the real response, whether it's vocal or mental. But it is, who do you think you are telling me what I have to do?
So what I like to kind of flip the script here, and which is exactly what you're talking about there. It's instead of calling it an action plan, it's this plan. It's because I said I would. Because your word, when you give me your word, that should be so much more valuable than me telling you what you need to do. So because I said I would, based on what we just talked about, what are some things that you feel that you could do? And the actual plan is called because I said I would. Mm-hmm. And I normally have them label it to one or three. So you tell me, Will, what are those things that are going to help us achieve what we just talked about? How are we going to make those improvements? Mm-hmm. And then you write it. And then I'll add a couple things. I'm like, consider this, consider that. Okay, how are we going to measure it? How can we truly measure it? Because if you can't measure it, let's change the goal. Because everything you really challenge yourself on, there's a way to measure it.
Yes.
And that's how you know you're succeeding.
Good. Well, all right. So tell me, who do you want to have talk to you? And then secondly, what would somebody know about themselves and their company that should say to them, I need to talk to Hernani?
Yeah. So if you feel like you're having some challenges in the workplace where you're starting to see a high turnover rate and that's not good, especially in this time and age, you're having a hard time recruiting people, or you've got some things out there that they're lacking accountability. We're just not getting able to get anything done. Or it might be the opposite. There's just way too much accountability. Reach out to me. That you could probably, the first thing I would recommend is buy the book on Amazon. It's a Balanced Accountability. You can also look me up on the internet with my first name, Hernani, Hernani, Alves.com. And just look that up. It'll give you a little bit of history, who I am. I'm real easy. You could shoot me an email. We'll get on the phone and kind of talk through some of the challenges you are and see how I can help.
Good. All right. So is this national, North America, Sacramento area? Who do you want to speak with?
Yeah, anywhere, North America. So that's currently where I'm trying to stay closer to home. English is my second language. So Portuguese is my first. So I do have a little international spill, but right now my daughter's growing up. That's kind of one of the reasons I left the corporate world and wanted to have a little bit more freedom. My daughter's going to college next year. So I wanted to make sure that I've lost so much time with her at the beginning. My last year in the corporate world, I was 128 nights on the road.
Oh, goodness.
So now I'm trying to be here this last year, be present, be there to kind of before she leaves the nest and moves on. And I've got my son. So I'm trying to stay closer to North America where I can kind of get in and out in some of these cities.
Well, how will people get in touch with you?
Best way is balancedaccountability.com. Just Google that up and that'll get you directly to my website. And then from there, it'll give you my email address and you can forward it to me.
Excellent.
It's that easy. Yeah. Those emails come to me. I look at them and then I try to make sure I respond and get back to you soon.
Well, thanks a lot, Hernani. This has been a very interesting, and challenging, conversation about how to help business leaders bring accountability to themselves and to their companies and to help the people that report to them succeed, right?
Absolutely. Accountability equals love. And once you understand how the love happens, your team will become so much more loyal. You'll get that fourth P, which I didn't talk about yet, but the fourth P is peer-to-peer accountability. And this is where that high-performance culture really starts to take off.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to seeing your success in the years to come. So thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you, Will. It's a pleasure. And thank you for having this.
So this is another experience with people who can help businesses in California thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.